I was going to start with saying thank you for coming to the last session on the last day of a great conference, and I'll still say that. We thought we might have a nearly empty room, but we're so glad so many of you have come. We do know that the movement from Dewey to a word-based system is of quite a bit of interest in the library world, and I guess you're here to prove it. I'd like first to introduce our panelists. On my right is Marshall Shore from Phoenix, Arizona. He's an information curator, formerly of Maricopa County, and I'm sure that you've heard of the word Maricopa. Next is Molly Moyer, who's a retired bookseller and librarian from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver. And finally, Rachel Fuel, who's the Collection Development Manager for Anythink Libraries in Colorado. And I'm Linda Friess, and I'm also from Anythink Libraries. The reason we're talking to you today is because we do know there's a lot of interest in word-based systems, but also the reason we're doing it is so that we feel customers can find things more easily, we've taken down some barriers, and there's more flexibility in organizing the collection. So before, without further ado, I'll turn it over to Molly, who'll be talking about the bookstore perspective and moving from a public library into a bookstore.
Good morning. I'm a Luddite, but I vote, and I want to spacebar. I want to go backwards. I want to go backwards. That's a metaphor. This is such an interesting picture to me about Dewey up there and the children who are the future. And we want libraries to be for children in the future. We want them to still be alive. It, just like we want, I have to put in a plug, independent bookstores to still be alive for people. Thank you. So I've been wondering what Dewey might think about this, and then I thought, it's irrelevant. I worked for 20 years as a librarian in public libraries in Colorado, and then I've spent the last 25 and a half years at the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver. So, thank you. And the reason that I'm here, I do not work for Rangeview, although sometimes I think I do, and sometimes they think I do, but I don't. And I'm here to talk about how I had to change my thinking coming from a library to a bookstore. I thought it would be a piece of cake. Well, it's not, because Dewey was my structure. It was the way things were, and I knew the numbers. I still know the numbers. And then I moved to the Tattered Cover, where we are a word-based system. And the thing I had to change my mind about, I had to learn to be more flexible about where things are. And in a bookstore, we have a lot more flux in stock than you will in libraries. And as Joyce Meska says, the difference between libraries and bookstores is that in a bookstore, we do not want our books back. So it's possible that books will not appear in the same place on the shelf from day to day that they used to. So I had to learn to be flexible, and I had to learn to listen to customers. The bookstore is a customer-based organization, and so we had to learn to listen to how they ask for things. What language do they use? If I get a book in my hand and I don't know what to do with it, I think, well, where would I look for this if I were in the bookstore? And so we try to uncreate barriers between the customer and the book. The most important thing is that customers find books as quickly as possible with as few barriers as possible, which is where customer service comes in. At the Tattered Cover, we have gotten rid of, reference desks. We used to have big desks that we could hide behind, too. When we got rid of those, we roam the floor to help people. And if I see somebody wandering around with a piece of paper in hand looking up, I mean, that's always a clue. They're looking up, trying to figure out where things are. I go and ask if I can help. I've actually tried that in some places, and it's amazing how unhelpful people are. This is a picture from the tattered cover. I hope you can see it all right. We have wooden bookshelves. We have an inviting atmosphere with a green carpet and brown bookshelves. And so we invite people to come in and stay for a while. And the main heading is business up there. And then on the shelves, we have subsections like business management, small business, that sort of thing. And then alongside that shelf talker, it tells how the books are arranged. Because in the tattered cover, some sections are by author and some sections are by title. So we have to let the customer know how the books are arranged. Dewey does that sort of automatically, but again, it depends on how people ask for things. If they want, where are your business biographies, they go to the business section, so we put the business biographies in the business section. So we have to pay attention to our customer base. We also do a lot with merchandising. We have stands around with books that we can feature. We have staff picks, that sort of thing, to entice people. There's the cookbook with posters up above. The owner of the bookstore does not like any what she calls brown space because the walls are brown. So we try to fill each space with something so that people can see it. So we use posters a lot. Colorful posters in the cookbook section. Again, it's with subsections delineated and how the books are arranged. I don't know where that is, but it's an example of what we do. I can't read.
Law, true crime.
Oh, law and true crime. Now, here's an example of true crime. We never knew what to do with true crime. We tried putting it in with the mystery books. Mystery readers don't necessarily read true crime. So we tried it over in romance, and that didn't work out very well either. So we finally put it next to the law books. And the criteria that we use is a book selling where it is? If it's not selling and we know it's a popular book that people are interested in, then we need to move it to where people can find it. Same thing is true of weddings. Weddings are supposed to be in reference, and putting a wedding book next to the World Almanac does not make sense either. So we finally created a section in cookbooks, kind of at the end of cookbooks, because it's sort of like entertaining. I mean, many weddings are entertaining, as you know. And then we put the wedding magazines next to them so people can get every, it's all right there where they can see it. This is how we have our magazines displayed. Poetry, we put all of our poetry together alphabetically by poet. We don't care if they're British or American. I mean, we do, but, you know. Here's an example of how we use displays. And there are times in the store when I have been in love with a book, and The Fur Person by Mae Sarton is one of them. I love that book. And I started doing shelf talkers recommends on that book. And when I was doing it, we were selling two or three a month. And so I would put it out where people would find it, where it didn't belong, but where somebody might come across it. And when I stopped doing the shelf talkers, the sales went down. So there is something. And with you, it would be circulation. Are these books circulating? Are the people who want them getting them? And I always like to put things in unexpected places, because where people look for things is not always where they are. That's a humor table. And that's Marshall. We're not going there right now. So the thing for me, and there was actually a question before we started about how can I find a book on the shelf without a Dewey number. When I heard that Rangeview was going to eschew Dewey, I thought, oh my God, they can't do that. Like, I got, you know, that stomach thing, my stomach fell. Who do they think they are? I said to myself. Not out loud. And then I went to work at the Tattered Cover, which is a word-based system, and helped people find books all day long. So it's a matter of changing the way you think a little bit. In some ways, it's much better, and these folks are going to talk about that a little bit. But it's about flexibility and thinking the way customers think. When I was a librarian, I had to think the way Dewey thought, and where's this book going to go and all that stuff. But now it's about where will people find these books, and you can teach them to use a new system, but the important thing is customer service, that you be there to help them. I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Molly. We all began with BISAC, the Book Industry Standards and Cataloging, as the basis for a word-based system, but we all tweaked it to meet our local needs. And we'll turn it over to Marshall now. Marshall was one of the pioneers, as you well know, with a word-based system when he was with Maricopa, and he'll talk some more about how it worked there.
Well, good morning, everyone. Hello! So yes, we have my name. I am Marshall Shore, now followed by Information Curator. You're probably wondering, why does it say that? Well, about a year ago, I left the library district, and what I was doing, this term basically came out of trying to fold a lot of different projects I was working on and passions all under one name, instead of having to have, okay, here's this part of my life, here's this part of my life, here's this part of my life. It was like, let's develop one term. And this actually came out of a meeting at a pod camp in Arizona. And sitting down with a woman who is pretty much one of like the godmothers of entrepreneurship in the Southwest. It's like we just sat there talking, and all of a sudden it's like, out of one of our mouths rolled this information curator, and it was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly it. Kind of bringing that idea of museum and information and the fun, accessibility, and everything of information. So that's why I call myself an information curator. Now, my background, basically, I've been in libraries 20-plus years. Started off in Brooklyn Public, New York Public, Phoenix, Arizona, working for Phoenix Public, and then Maricopa. Now, why this is important is because one day our director walked in and said, we have a building, let's make it special. It's like, okay, so what does that look like? So I was thinking, okay, so I ran off to another library with my DDC in hand, trying to think, okay, how do we come up with some terms to try and help organize the collection? And about 2 hours later, I had gotten one shelf and had a long list of things. And I was like, you know, that KISS method, keep it simple. There's got to be something else. Now, it also comes at a time where Maricopa was doing focus groups. And instead of just reading the report of what was learned in those focus groups, I actually started attending the focus groups because you hear a lot of things that don't make it under those major headings. You hear side comments and things. And one of the things I realized there was the audience that was showing up tended to be, I would say, in like the 55-plus range. And I was like, okay, so what else can we do? So I called a friend at a local college and said, can we borrow a student class? And she was like, sure, come on down. So we went and basically did a focus group that we had done with in the library, but now doing it on the college campus with 18 to 26-year-olds. And what was interesting about that was not necessarily the overhead information, but it was the side comments, things like, you know, when I'm driving, I go by the larger bookstore with tons more books to get to the little bookstore over here that has comfortable chairs. Oh, file that one away for later. And so really, this really evolved out of talking to customers. I mean, we heard time and time again at Maricopa that they felt the library was like a bookstore. And really, this really kind of started hitting me. And so what I started doing was looking a lot at third place, which is you have home, you have work. Where is that other place you like to go? So I started doing a lot of research and looking to see what that really meant. And really, it's a liberating free space that really welcomes people, that says, here I am, come and enjoy me, bring your friends, spend time here, relax, play, learn, use me. So basically, this is what we wound up with at Maricopa. I mean, this is standing pretty much at the front of the children's room looking through the library. And you can see, does anyone see where the fiction collection is? So basically, when you walk in the front door, you see these huge 3-foot-high letters that say fiction. So it's like there is no mistaking where you're going. This is the kids' area. Because it's part of this library is unique, the fact that it sits on a high school campus. We kind of had an institutional feel going on because we had lots of white walls, and we really couldn't change that. So what we looked at doing was using signage to add a bit of color, and then we did end panels that we threw a lot of images on to kind of warm the place up a bit. And then we put theater gels in there to kind of add a little bit of color. So really the elements that I was looking at in trying to create this library was really looking at the shelving, display, furniture was very important, signage, and collection. And for me, they're all equally important. It was like, and that's what was so funny, I mean, the collection was just a piece of a larger puzzle. And you can see here we have shelving. The signage, as you see, where it says social science. It took us about a year to come up with that, of just constantly tweaking and playing to get the right font, the right color contrast, so that it was a warm contrast, but you could also read it. We came up with some great stuff from a foot away. We put it up, we walked in, you couldn't read it. It was just a big blob of color. So it was like we kept playing and really looking at Paco Underhill and Why We Buy. He really talks about signage and trying to view it through the customer's eyes. And does it make sense? Is it clear? Can you look at it? Do you have to think about it? So we really tried to distill the information down as much as we could. Now you'll also see another important element of this. On the bottom of this bookshelf, you'll see wheels. We tried to do a lot of flexibility so the library could easily be reconfigured quite easily. We've got bookshelves on wheels. We've got chairs on wheels. So that it could easily be changed, so it wouldn't be some stagnant thing that's like, okay, I know right where I'm going. I never have to walk by anything else. I just zoom to the section I want and run away. Because, you know, it's like on a high school campus, they would have an assignment, so now they can pull a bookcase over and put all the books for that assignment right there. Or, suddenly, Oprah comes out with a new book list. Okay, so let's put those Oprah books right up front. We also use a lot of slat wall. So we developed these columns within the shelves, and what we've done there is the staff really put their own picks. Now, what's great about this is it's right next to the self-check machines. So this really creates points of sale. So as people are waiting for a checkout machine, they see, oh, my gosh, there's this book. And, oh, my gosh, it's my favorite clerk who loves this book, so I'm going to check it out. We did the columns over here so that we could hang the OPAC throughout the library instead of clustering them all together because, of course, you always know when you first walk in right where you want to look for your book. And also the slat wall allows you to do is create unique displays that are infinitesimally adaptable. And then we get to the furnishings. The chairs, we have 3 different types of chairs here. And what we did was we actually had a team of people that went out and spent an entire day going around the city, sitting in chairs. We had different heights, different sizes, different ages, and genders, so that we got a wide variety of responses on chairs. And unless they all agreed on a chair, we didn't even consider it. We knew this library not just on a high school campus, but also near a senior living center. So we knew there'd be a wide variety of people coming in to use it. So we really wanted chairs that would accommodate a variety of people. Now, you'll see over here, these chairs in the corner have PC tablet arms. So people can put their cup of coffee on there. They can put their laptop. It's also, you'll see they're on wheels, so that if somebody suddenly wants to get a group of people together, they can just push the chairs together. And when the day is done, you want to change it, they're easy to move. Extremely lightweight, but very durable. And the other thing that I think is really cool, I don't know if they don't really show up in this picture, is the two chairs up and down, metallic copper vinyl. I was like, what? I mean, I saw that and I was like, oh my gosh, we've got to use this. Because Arizona is the copper state. So it was like, oh, metallic copper vinyl. So, and what we also did was tried to create lots of little niches or nooks where people could go in and feel themselves surrounded, but still be a part and visible from the rest of the library. So there wasn't really any dead space. And the people really felt comfortable and inviting. We tried to put as many chairs throughout as we could. When we were doing chairs, we tripled the amount of lounge seating that we normally would have done in this branch. Because it was like, you know, people are going to want to come and hang out and just relax. And so we tripled the amount of seating, did all the lighting, did lots of colors on the chairs. So that really created a fun, interesting atmosphere. And then we get to the collection. Now, you'll see here we have the spine labels. And you saw like the big shelf, the fiction, and then you saw the end cap on the signs. And then this is each shelf tells you what's on that shelf. And here you can see this is obviously the health diet section. And you'll notice that the label covers up the author's name on most titles. So one of the things we did was the shelving staff were spending so much time trying to figure out who wrote what book to figure out where to put it, that what we did was they said, well, you know, if we shelved by title, it would go so much quicker. So that's what we've done. In the nonfiction, it's basically alphabetical by title. And I mean, and again, this has really been an entire staff process. I mean, like the pages, that was their recommendation. Maricopa has now, as they build new branches, all the new branches are Dewey-less. As they go along, they've retrofitted two branches. Well, actually, I guess one and a half. One is a new branch that they just brought over the collection, but then they've retrofitted two libraries as well. So it's one of those things that the staff are constantly involved. We constantly were meeting with the vendor, with the staff, to really talk about what's the collection look like, how is it being used, changing subtitles, subtopics, and really working with it, really letting it be an organic piece. Now, since we did this, it's really kind of cool. I mean, we did this in 2007. So it's great that I think the conversation has changed. I mean, when this first hit press, I was called an idiot, stupid, sacrilege. And so it's so interesting now that the conversation has really kind of progressed beyond that, and people are starting to have that debate and realize that it's not necessarily dropping Dewey, but that it's really about customer service, that it really focuses on those hurdles that we place up for the public and trying to decrease those. So you've got Library Journal, which did an article that talked about all the libraries that are now looking at doing this. Rangeview, you've got Darien, Connecticut, and really just kind of setting the tone of, okay, here we are moving forward. And then Francine wrote a great response to that as well, and just saying, you know, it is all about customer service. It's also interesting the response from mainstream media. I've been on NPR National, NPR Local. A few months ago, I was talking to a friend who is a, I guess I write a Sunday column on management. And we were talking about this, and he was like, oh my God, let me write an article on this innovation and kind of how it was so organic and it just happened. And so there's the article that he wrote there. A few weeks ago, I actually had a meeting at Perry with Changing Hands, which is an independent bookstore in Tempe, Arizona. And what they do, I mean, I brought them to the library to kind of get their reaction to the fact that it kind of looks like a bookstore. And they're like, oh, it's nice and pretty. Now what? We actually sat down and had this great conversation on libraries and bookstores. And one of the things that I took away from that was they're like, well, you know, we're getting asked reference questions all the time. People ask us in our store why we don't have a photocopier because they just want this one page. And they were like, and well, you know, and I was like, well, you know, what if we did like a collaboration between a bookstore and a library? And they're like, oh, you know, that would never work because the public knows you go to the library for free books. They never ask to buy the book. And I was like, oh, not necessarily the case. And so it was really this lessons learned. They were like, oh my gosh, there's this bookstore in San Francisco that got rid of their customer service desk. They have all this staff that just wanders around. And this was cutting edge to them. And I'm like, well, libraries have been doing that for quite some time. And so it was really this interesting give and take. And so what I'm hoping to do is actually meet with them again and try and turn that into a podcast, because I think that would be really interesting across the board for bookstores and for libraries. Now, one of the things I will do is talk, when we opened Perry on that very first day, we bought into the hype. We brought in extra staff. We had extra management staff there. We brought in from branches. We brought lots of people in because we knew people were going to be so confounded by our lack of Dewey. So the doors open up. The masses start rushing in. This woman's walking right towards me, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to explain all about how we no longer use Dewey. We're using this other system, and I see her scanning the library. Her mouth goes, gardening. And all of a sudden, she makes a beeline right to the gardening section. Completely cut me out of the picture. I was so deflated. Here I had gotten all worked up and hyped to explain what we were doing, and I didn't get to use it. So I'm really happy that this discussion is continuing and evolving. And so that's why I think it's important that we're all here today talking about this and going on. We did a program virtually yesterday morning that will be available for a year. There's discussion on that going on for the next year. So there's lots of places for that debate to continue. Everything else, if you have any questions, my email is marshall@marshallshore.com. My web address is marshallshore.com. And please, I mean, let's talk and see where we can push libraries to next and really push that innovation and adapting to a whole new world that we're working with. Thank you.
About a year and a half ago, five people from Anything Libraries traveled to Maricopa County to see how they were doing it. And Harry Courtright and his crew were so generous with us with their time and their information. And we sat down with them, and they said, when you get to the library, you're going to say, oh, okay. And we did. Just as Marshall said, we thought we might be confused, or we didn't really know. We got off the plane back in Denver and said, we can do this. So a year and a half later, our six branches and our bookmobile are converted to a word-based system, which we call WordThink. And we found that circulation has increased, people are very happy with it, and they're enjoying finding things in our browsable collection. Rachel's crew did this. We have five people in the collection development office, but every person in every branch put labels on books. They worked with the process, so they understand it very, very well. There's no one who's in this audience who didn't put labels on carts and carts of books and get the conversion ready. And Rachel's going to talk to you more now about the nuts and bolts of how it worked.
Are you ready for some technical library stuff? Okay. So I'm Rachel Fuel. I'm the Collection Development Manager at Anythink Libraries. We're a revolution of Rangeview Library District. So part of our revolution has been making our collections more accessible and more customer-friendly. As Linda said, we kind of put the rush on our project after we went to Maricopa because we were opening 4 new libraries. We wanted those libraries to come on board with the classification system that we wanted. We didn't want to get new beautiful collections and have to go through and handle them another time and re-sticker them and kind of muck them up. So we did put the rush on to get our big project done. We completed our entire collection by the end of December last year. So right now what you see is our WordThink grid. Very generously, the Maricopa County folks shared the information that they were using to communicate with their vendors about what they wanted. We have all of our materials, well, probably 90% of our materials, cataloged and processed out of house. So they have to look good when they come to us because we want them shelf-ready to get out of our office and into branches within 48 hours. So here's one of the bits that we give our vendors, one of our communication tools, to say, what do we want things to look like and where do they want them to go? Molly used the example earlier of weddings, and we also thought weddings were kind of funky in reference. So, for example, right here, we put weddings into relationships. And so as we classify those on the shelves, we're, you know, working with this all the time and trying to be quite organic about it. Sometimes we have our subjects all in alphabetical order in some branches. We're trying that. In other branches, we're trying to put, as a relationship progresses, you know, put them in that order. You know, we're just trying to figure out how would a customer look for this stuff. So, yeah, it can be kind of interesting. So this is some more information about working with vendors. As I said, we had quite a tight timeline to get all this stuff done. We decided we were going to do it in October. We presented to our administrative team and our board in, I think, December or January, how we were going to do it. And then we started working on it in May, the physical out there in the branches. But in those 3 months in between, we were frantically working, you know, 10-hour days, 12-hour days to get our catalog set up and ready to go. So here's what we did. We planned our branch closures. We didn't really know how long this was going to take. We have to touch almost every single thing. So all of our nonfiction. We didn't touch the fiction, by the way. So this is all about our nonfiction classification. We also had 6 branches. So we were ordering for our new branches, ordering WordThink, and we were ordering Dewey for the branches that hadn't been converted yet. So we juggled that too. And then we went and we made a translation grid, which I'll show you later, and we continue to get feedback from the staff. We've changed things up a bit in some places. We've broken down some more categories as we've moved forward, and we've shrunken some categories because we had just too much. So it's constantly shifting and evolving and growing. And we're constantly training and talking to the staff about how is this working. I'm trying to ask everybody every time I'm out there, you know, does this work well for you? What would you change? Can you help us figure out a place to move that true crime? It's a problem for us, too. I don't know where to put it. So to dispel a little bit of a myth here, we're not throwing the whole thing out. We are still using a traditional MARC record, and you'll see right here, this is from our catalog. I just grabbed a record, and I kind of outlined our 655s up there. That's where we put our BISAC subject heading, and our 092s now have not our call number anymore. It's a call word, really, so we have business there, and then it appears in the item record as business, call number. That's where it is. And like Maricopa, we also decided to shelve them in title alphabetical order. So it's not as if we just get books and throw them wherever, which is also a misconception about this classification system. So we have a really awesome guy who works in my department, Logan, and he went through our whole list of BISAC subject headings, and you should look at this online. And BISAC, for those of you who don't know, Book Industry Standards and Communications, that's what it stands for. But there is this huge list, and when we printed it out one time, it was 116 pages. So what we've done for our vendors and for, we're now starting to show staff what this looks like, because I never really thought anybody would care, but it helps to make so much sense of what is this thing. We have all of the BISAC headings over there that start with a funky letter number thing. And then the columns on the other side are what we want them to appear like on our spine labels and in our catalog. So, for example, there's reference weddings again coming up. We have also family and relationship siblings. Well, we wanted all that to stay together. We didn't want to have another category and call that family and relationships. There's the health and fitness sexuality, and we're putting that in with relationships as well, because are you really going to look for that in health and fitness? So we're trying to get those like items to live in the same spot, and that's a really nice piece of the adaptability and the flexibility of this process. And we think so far it's helping our customers too. Here are some examples of our spine labels. So not every single category is in title alpha order. As you can see here, the biographies, we have put the subject of the biography on the spine label, and that's how they're organized. Our poetry is organized by the authors. What else do we have that's different? It's drama as well. So we have just a few things that we've done slightly differently, but for the most part, it looks just about like this. Our DVDs are now also, our nonfiction DVDs are also interfiled with our nonfiction. So if you're going to tile your floor, you can get a book and the video right there. Not video, DVDs. We don't do videos either anymore. And one big great thing to come out of this was the graphic novels. I mean, those, does anybody know where to put them? Is anybody cataloging them right? I mean, we just had them everywhere and had a million different ways that they were organized. So the graphic novels have been such a great project to work on and such a great thing for customers. They're loving finding all those Spider-Mans right there. So converting our catalog, as I said, we took about 3 months, split up the catalog, and kind of took out chunks. So, for example, I'm giving you pets, dogs. Well, we were able to take that full Dewey range, and what we did in our catalog, we used Horizon ILS. What we were able to do is put in our new, what would be our new call number, pets, dogs, into the item notes. And then, when we were ready, we could sequel those out of that field and into our call number field. So that was the easy way. We could just kind of flip a switch to do it. But the hard part was going through the entire collection and trying, from a behind-the-scenes standpoint, put things where we thought they would probably go. But you know how it is. When you're in the back, you don't have a book in hand, and you're trying to figure out, is that a pet's dog's book? Well, Dewey said it was. And then you'd get out there in the branch and try to put a label on that and go, oh, no, you know, we got to switch this up. So there was a lot of tweaking the process and changing it up as we were doing hands-on stuff versus the behind-the-scenes identifying every single thing and touching every record. So, yeah, we did. We went through our entire collection item by item. Every nonfiction collection was converted, so that took a lot of times. And for our first couple of branches, we thought, oh, my gosh, we forgot about the nonfiction DVDs. And so then we would have one staff member pulled off to work on that. So this is definitely all in its infancy, and we're working all the time to change it and develop a better way to do this process. And as I said, we were able to sequel our stuff out of that item record, item note, and put it right into the call number field quite easily when we were in the branch doing the conversion. So it wouldn't turn over for a customer until their branch was physically converted. The funny thing about Marshall's example, too, of everybody being ready for the you know, angry masses about getting rid of Dewey, we just put up a simple sign outside in our doorways of our branches after they were converted. It said, "Pardon our dust. You might notice things are a little different here." And really, that's all it took. People weren't up in arms, no pitchforks, nothing. Okay, so this is another big piece of what we do when we're converting our branches. We kind of sit down in a war room, a few of us, and create a map. And we go through and find the numbers of what we have in each collection, what we think we have in each collection. And we figure out, well, where could that fit in this new configuration? In some of our branches, we didn't get new shelving. We just had to use the existing shelving and put stuff back. So it was kind of like this enormous puzzle. You know, you're upsetting the whole collection, pulling everything apart. Our biography collections grew enormously because we pulled lots of stuff out of history that used to be, you know, just in the 900s, but now we thought it worked better as a biography. So some of our collections grew a lot, some of them shrunk, and we had to figure out how are they all going to fit in this same building again. So that took us a long time, and we really tried to get things to live next to each other. On this map, for example, this is a children's area, and we tried to group a lot of the homework type assignments together. So if you're coming into the library, you should be able to find all of your, you know, biography, history, people and places, all of those things together. And then we tried to keep the, what kind of stuff do you talk about at home or work with at home? And, you know, we did the religion and arts and crafts, gardening, cooking, kind of stuff all together. And we're still playing with that, you know. We're trying to figure out, is that working for everybody? And we're getting feedback, too, to go back and say, well, then we're going to have to figure out where else that could go. We also realized the fastest and easiest way for us to handle our conversions was closing our branches. And, you know, that's hard for your communities. We have to close for a week to do our first branch conversion, and it kind of upsets things. But we were able to do that. We had 12 FTE work on our first project, and it was a 35,000-item collection. We got it done. Subsequent collections, we had to close a little longer if they were a larger collection. We were fortunate also, as I said, to be opening buildings. So we could close a little bit earlier and get working on those projects and work, in some cases, for 6 weeks to get it done and get it really looking the way we wanted it to look before we moved those collections into new buildings. We worked very hard in-house with our awesome communications department. They developed signs for us, and as Marshall was saying also, that signage is key. You need to be able to say, oh, that's where the gardening is, and head there. So we have these really wonderful signs that are contrasted, and we're working really hard too on figuring out, are those working? How are we going to tweak all of that too? Is it working for customers? Do we need more signs in the middle? Do we need, you know, larger signs some places? We don't know. So we're working together with our communications team to come up with that. They also help create these maps, and this has been a wonderful tool for customers as we've opened larger branches, and the shelving is, you know, we don't have this traditional, you know, rows and rows and rows and rows of shelving. We wanted to create those nooks, those little places where customers would feel comfortable to come in and sit down. So our collection, in some cases, we have islands where a collection lives. Maybe all your home and garden and do-it-yourself kind of things are on one island, or in a little room where you have all of the nature and pets right there all together. So that was an interesting piece, and so customers are finding their ways with a map and with the assistance of our roving staff members, too. So it was all a part of a total package to try to tell our customers, we think you're important, we want you to stay here, we want you to be able to find things and feel smart and feel intuitive when you're in our buildings. And with that is a challenge, too, for staff. Because what we're changing from, I think, in a lot of ways for our profession, is from retrieving that information to welcoming people in and letting them find things and discover and helping them if they need that little extra assistance. So it's been all about customers and finding what's best for our community and really shaping things so that it's the most convenient, most welcoming, most empowering for them. And that's me.
We left time for questions because we thought that there might be quite a few questions you would have of us. We do have a mic in the middle with Stacy, our mic holder. So if you have questions, we would be happy to entertain them now.
It isn't entirely clear to me how you are communicating to your vendor what spine label you want to use, because you're modifying... It appears to me that you're modifying the BISAC headings to something specific for you. So could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. We do have custom cataloging with Baker & Taylor, so we communicate all the time. There are all kinds of things that they don't understand where they're supposed to go. So we're doing that on a, you know, item-by-item basis. But for the most part, that grid that I showed you, it has been the best tool for them. What that says is when you get that information from the publisher that says this is what BISAC heading it falls into, we've given them the key that is, where's this going to go in our collection? What's our spine label going to look like? I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, and I can throw out, it was when we were doing it, it was interesting because looking at BISAC and Borders and Barnes & Noble, they actually have subtle differences between them where things go. And so that's what we were kind of looking at. How do we put things in? Maricopa basically outsourced everything through Brodart and Baker & Taylor. And so that was one of the issues that we were first dealing with. It was kind of like when I walked into our head of tech services and said, okay, can we do this? She's like, well, I don't know. Hit a button, and moments later we were talking to someone from Brodart, and they were like, yes, we can. And come to find out, as working through this, we discovered about a year and a half, almost 2 years into it, that all the records come in with the official BISAC heading. They were automatically stripping that out and then going back through and putting it in. So we're trying to figure out a way that they would keep that and work with that original BISAC.
I've been in technical services for almost 30 years, and I like it's refreshing. Okay, so, but I'm one person, and we have a collection of about 250,000. How do I get the other departments to buy into this? I know that's probably that's another session, but I think this is, we're always looking to, I don't want to say reinvigorate ourselves, and I think this would be one way to do it, but help us out.
Well, I can speak to our experience. We used to be Rangeview Library District, and our board decided we wanted to shake things up. We want to do something different. We want to do something that's going to be really big and exciting for our customers. And they hired a visionary. Our director wants us to try new things. She's excited for us to, you know, just put it out there. Try something new and different. Do you think customers will like it? Well, let's give it a go. So I really think the biggest piece of it for us is that we have, from the top down, total empowered investment in what the staff can do and what we can bring up to change in our libraries.
Yeah, I mean, this was definitely, we knew this was a system change, and that everyone had to be on board, and we didn't know when the doors opened, if it was going to be a success or failure. We had talked about how do we go back through and relabel all those books if we need to. Yeah, wouldn't that be a fun project? I see you're all just waiting for that one. And it was like, and no, it was a huge success, and it really got a debate going nationally with libraries and without the walls of the library. I mean, I was actually in a restaurant waiting to be seated with some friends, and there were these couple sitting next to us. They heard the word libraries. The woman looks over and she's like, well, you know what I heard about libraries? They're getting rid of Dewey. I mean, we just had a situation at this conference where there was a bartender saying, you know those librarians? They're doing away with Dewey. So it's suddenly now libraries have moved to a different spot in people's minds. It's brought it back to the forefront.
And I think also when we did our first branch, we went to the branch manager and said, let's just try this. We'll try it on a real small scale. We'll just do gardening. And the more we talked about it with her and with the staff, they were ready to go full force. We were after we had seen Maricopa. So I think having that staff involvement and having that excitement really helped with the groundswell of this is going to be great for our customers and let's all get on board.
Do you have any numbers of how much more the collection circulated switching to this system? You knew someone was going to ask that.
We do, yes. For our collection, our biographies in those branches that we've converted them all now. But we have preliminary numbers, so I just want to say that too. We're just starting out. This whole thing is in its infancy. Our biographies, though, have doubled in most of our locations, the circulation. Almost tripled in some. Our teen nonfiction has been off the charts at least 3 times. The circ has gone up. And then what other collections? Other collections that we were really surprised about are our test prep materials, education, math stuff. People just weren't finding that stuff in Dewey. And now they can walk right to it. It says education right on the spine. It says test right on the spine. And they're finding it. And really, you know, and another thing to say about that is we haven't had a lot of resistance either with customers coming in. Oh, I used to find that stuff right here. You know, they're finding it anyway because it says right exactly where it is, what it is, when they see it sitting there.
Yeah, we actually did surveys of customers and staff after we opened up Perry Library. And majority of the public were satisfied or higher with the organization of the Perry Library, and the staff were 100% on board with the organization. Now, we had the benefit of Perry being a new library at that point, so in the interview process, we were able to say, here's what we're doing in that library. And that was actually a really good thing because we got some very negative responses from some interviewees that were like, oh, that's never going to work. You know, something you probably shouldn't say in a job interview.
Hi. I came in as a pretty big skeptic, and I find this exciting But I was wondering if you found that you had any collections that this didn't work for. For instance, maybe local history collections. I work at San Francisco Public. We have a huge music collection of scores, and I can't see this working for that. So two things work together, say? Can you use Dewey for, or do you?
Right. What we've discovered is for our collection, and we have a popular browsing collection, so I'll put that right out there. We don't have anything, any extensive historical documents or government publications or anything like that. So for our collection, it's been great. I think you would have to modify it or use a combination of things if you had a more technical collection in any way.
Yeah, and that's really what we found as well. It was interesting because when we first opened Perry, the thought was, this will only work in a small library. And then, I don't know if any of you recently have been to a place called Powell's. That's rather large. And so it was kind of like, oh my gosh, you know, it wouldn't work for just a small library, but it would work for a large library. Now, Maricopa is as well popular blending. But I've also been in talks with a academic library that's interested in going a word schematic as well.
How does this work with a floating collection where you might have some branches that have been converted to this method, but you still have Dewey branches and those spine labels are moving around in the system?
Well, I mean, I can talk to that. That was one of the reasons why Maricopa at that point was not, and I don't think they're still doing floating collections, because you would then have a Dewey book and then this book that was completely cataloged, completely different, flying around, and where would that sit? So we don't do floating collections.
We also don't do floating collections, but I agree it would be problematic.
Do you think it would work if you had both the word and the Dewey on the spine label? So if it floated to a Dewey, you could do it that way, and if it...
There have been modifications. Arapaho Library District in Colorado opened its streets of South Glen, and they do have a modified system of neighborhoods, and they do the word-based as well as the Dewey number, and they're finding that that works for them. They don't have a floating collection either, but I think there are just so many different ways to do it, and whatever works with your customers would be the way you might want to go.
Thank you.
One of the things, when I was at Brooklyn Public, I worked in a library that was built and designed in the 70s, a la Charlie Robinson, give them what they want. And it was merchandised and Dewey. And one of the things that I did was it really kind of confused the public, because things could be in multiple places. It's like, well, is it in this word or is it in that number? And so that was actually one of the things that played into keep it simple. I was like, you know, we're just going to go with one thing. Instead of trying to do two things, let's just go one and not confuse the issue. Because one of the other things, I was going out, and when I would find someone who's like, you know, I'm not a library user, I'd be like, well, why not? Let's go grab a cup of coffee and talk about that. And one of the biggest things I heard was, those numbers make me feel stupid. I don't understand them. They scare me. So it was like, okay, then let's get rid of them.
Hello. I'm wondering if you found areas of your collection where you ended up weeding heavily, or if when you moved things around, if then you also found big holes or gaps in your collection that you didn't know existed.
Yes, both. We weeded so heavily when we did this. I mean, for a combination of reasons. Our collection hadn't been weeded in a decade, so we had to do it. And, you know, we didn't want to go through and touch and relabel every single thing if we were just going to chuck it. So it did revitalize our collections, and yes, we found there were huge gaps. And what's another great benefit of this system that we found is you can just see, you know, parenting is wiped out. We got to get more parenting. It's very easy to identify those holes and where you need to replenish your collection.
Yeah, those were the things we were talking about yesterday after the virtual program, was that when suddenly the opening day collection arrived, you put it up, and it was like, oh my gosh, there's huge gaps that with Dewey we would never have seen, but because things were now suddenly grouped in a different way, it was like, oh, shocking. So then it was constantly going back into the vendor saying, okay, you know, we need more of this. It's like, and tweaking.
Thank you.
Hi there. I'm short, so I'm standing on my tippy toes here. Several years ago, I remember reading about, and I'm not sure if this came from a bookstore standard, but it's something called affinities, whereby there is, you group certain subjects together based on use patterns. So, for example, and I might be making this up, but true crime was located always next to mysteries, because people who read a lot of mysteries also tended to read true crime as well. And I'm just wondering if anyone in this audience remembers this, and I can't remember where I read it. And I don't know where it came from. It might be from a bookstore industry standard.
Nope. No. No, I don't know about it. No one's raising a hand.
I promise you I did read it.
We believe you.
Hi. This past year, we've recently done a big remodel job in our children's room, created an early literacy spot. We've got movable shelving, good signage. Do you think we could implement this just in the children's room of our library rather than the rest of the library as a start? And how would we explain, because we have a countywide sharing of our collection. We could still share our fiction, but maybe just not our nonfiction?
Well, we think it could work in children's. Our children's grids are not completely, but they are different from the adult grids because we don't have true crime or weddings in children's, and we do have a lot more animals and dinosaurs and all of those things. So I think it could work in a children's collection, and the children certainly come in and find exactly what they want, and they learn where their section is. One of the areas in children's that we found was really successful were the 398.2s, because now they're called tails, and they're all grouped together, and you can find the three little pigs without kind of it being lost in between holidays and languages.
So as far as cataloging goes, you just change that portion with the people in the back. The rest of it would be regular Dewey at the rest of the library.
Well, okay. When we were converting, we had part Dewey and part WordThink, as Maricopa still does. So
okay.
It just looks different in the catalog.
I also talked to a Head Start librarian at one conference, and she wants to do all image-based cataloging for her Head Start library. So all of her dinosaurs would just have a dinosaur sticker on the spine for ease of children identifying what they want. So a different way to handle it.
I see the Spanish collection on that map. Can you talk a little bit about whether you did Spanish collections exactly the same or the labels in Spanish? And then also, I don't know if this is an issue for either of you, a library that might have two non-English collections.
Our Spanish collection has English labels. We figured if we were going to translate this to a new system and then translate it again, it's going to get pretty mucked up. So what we wanted to do was give it a go as it is, and at this point I'm working on a translation of our whole grid into Spanish, so at least it's going to have a little bit more usability for that customer who wants to come in and browse alone, without staff intervention.
But you have the same number of levels. You don't have fewer categories for a smaller collection.
Right. Same number of levels for all of our branches, no matter the size.
Hi. I'm interested in this process of retrofitting because we're not opening any new branches anytime soon. And so we have traditional shelving, if not only traditional, but in some cases, awful tall shelving, and not every branch, but certainly some. And so we can't do what, this lovely little thing in these little nooks and crannies. I mean, we've got the little soldiers going. So I guess I'm asking, can you speak to that a little bit more? Because clearly this would make it a lot easier to do the little, the groupings, but we're still really in a traditional physical setting.
Well, it was interesting. Perry actually has a sister library in another system, exact same floor plan or exact same layout for the space. And it's very much done in a traditional library where the stacks were, I think, 7 foot high in rows. And so I immediately took our assistant director down there and I said, look. And it was like, ugh. I mean, it really felt claustrophobic. And so, that was what was nice was having that thing to look at. That branch has been remodeled since then to be more of, they are still using Dewey, but also really considering the third place in the design. And so we were really looking at bookstores and other merchandising areas when we did that. So luckily we had the ability to have new shelving put in. Not sure if that answered your question.
No, because I know to do that.
Yeah. Well, we have some legacy libraries that have rows of tall shelving, 90 inches high. And we found that the signage helped a lot. We had really good signage. We still were able to do it in those legacy libraries. So the signage, we tried to face more things out and just do some merchandising within the tall rows of shelving. And it's not ideal, but it is working, and people in those branches are finding what they want.
Okay, that's well. One of the big things we discovered, though, for those legacy branches especially, was that WordThink takes so much more linear feet because you need to break them apart. They can't just run together like Dewey does. So that's a huge consideration, and that's a great time to weed a bunch of stuff. But that's what we needed to do, reconfigure it and make sure that collection could fit back in the building.
Yeah, because even if you're using tall shelving, you don't have to use that top shelf because it's about accessibility and making sure the patron can get to that book themselves.
I wonder if you could speak to how this works with respect to your shelvers and the people who are pulling things for the pick list. I'm hoping the answer is they find it a lot easier. Is that true?
They do.
They do. Shelving, I mean, that's when the shelver said, you know, if we do this by title, it'll go much quicker. They zip right through it now. It's really incredible. And basically, that's why everything has a spine label, is more for to getting in the right spot, but also to go and retrieve it when you get that pull list. And it basically works the same way as Dewey.
Great, thank you.
Hi. Can I go online and see your WordThink grid, and is it copyrighted, and can I use it as is? Can I adjust it? Is it a copyright issue?
No, we share everything. It's online right now at anythinklibraries.org/anythinktank. Sorry, think tank. And we welcome you also to continue to the discussion there.
Hi.
Oh, yes. Anythink, with a K, libraries.org/anythinktank. You're welcome.
Hi. Two things. One, I remember reading that Affinities article as well, and I can't remember anything other than that, so the person who made that suggestion, it's out there, it really is, and now I'm really keen to go and find it. The other one is I have twice in traditional branches with traditional long rows of shelving gone in, weeded furiously, and removed whole ranges of shelving, and that way have found that sitting space. And it's always that magical miracle. You weed like crazy, and the circulation goes up. You give them some place to sit, and the circulation goes up. So even faced with ranges and ranges, you just go in there and you weed so that you have a whole range free, and scrounge some chairs, and all of a sudden it's a miraculous space just to chill out in. So it's doable, even if you can't renovate your library.
Lovely. Thank you.
We have time for one more question if there is another, but that question was awfully good. Yes.
No, fiction is working really well the way it is. We have broken out more genres for our fiction, and that's the only change we've made.
Thank you so much for coming. We hope that the discussion does continue for a long time.